Well, good morning. I'm not Dan Smith. Dan had sent me a text yesterday afternoon, and he said, I'm feeling really sick, and I know that you're speaking for first service. Could you speak for second? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I have a talk prepared for first service. And he said, never mind. I'll get someone else. And then about an hour later, he sent me a text. He said, you're stuck. So I'm Joe Schmitz. My wife Charlotte and I and my daughters attend here. Normally we're at first service. That's typically where you will find us. So first I have an apology and a couple of disclosures. I don't normally dress like this when I speak for church. But at first service, we do things a little non-traditional sometimes. And I had sent out a text on social media that I was going to be wearing these spiffy shoes. And there wasn't time to change. So I apologize for that. The other thing is I'm not a preacher or a theologian. I am sure that many of you here today are more qualified than I to be up here. I just happen to be Dan's willing victim. So anything I say from here, if it doesn't quite strike you as correct, that's not on Dan. And I apologize profusely. The other part is I did work this up for first service. I made a couple of changes, but if you're going, that doesn't quite fit, well, that's why. Good morning. Happy Sabbath. I hope you had a great Christmas. Opened too many presents. Oh, by the way, Kimber, that was amazing. Oh, I was blown away. And the decorations are phenomenal to all of you that contributed. I hope you ate too much food, had too much fun. And now here we are at the end of 2017, and 2018 is right here. So I had a chance to speak for first service before, and Pastor Dan was complimentary. He said, you did a really good job. And then he said, you know, I work with a lot of young speakers and young preachers, and he said, they always do great their first time because they bring everything from their background into it, and they do wonderful. But on their second time, they bomb. So good luck. In first service, over the last month of December, we've had the theme, the work of Christmas. It seemed funny to me. What kind of work is Christmas? After all, Christmas is about celebrating the birth of Jesus. That moment when God did his greatest miracle. God becoming man, taking on all of man's burdens. We celebrate the day that we recognize as Christ's birth. We may celebrate by going to church, by giving one another presents, by spending time with family. So how does work come into it? Well, the conversation we were having upstairs is that it's Jesus' birth that started the process. It's like a book. You have the introduction, which is all of the history up to Jesus' birth. And his birth is the first chapter. And his death and resurrection, that's the midpoint, the high drama. And the triumphant conclusion is his coming again. But everything in between, that's the work. And it's not only the work that Jesus does, it's the work that we do as well. So when we talked about the December theme, we didn't want to just do Christmas. And that's not to minimize the amazing miracle that's Jesus' birth, but a longing that we are called to minister to others. As Christians, we generally focus on two things, Jesus' birth and his death and resurrection. And often we miss everything in the middle. That's like a sandwich that's only bread. Think about all the stuff that happened in those 33 years between. A couple of weeks ago, Pastor Dan preached about Herod and the wise men and how after seeing Jesus, they went home a different way. And then an angel warned the family and they fled to Egypt until Herod died. Think about that for just a minute. How long was that for? Can you imagine going to a foreign land on foot, to the land that your ancestors fled from? The land where your people were persecuted and enslaved, and that's where you go for safety? What happened while they were there? Did Jesus learn to speak Egyptian? We know at age 12 that his parents took him to the temple, and the teachers were astounded at his body of knowledge. We know as an adult that John the Baptist met and baptized Jesus, and he started his ministry. And in 3 years of ministry, he changed his nation and laid the groundwork to change the world. And we kind of skip over that. Did we focus on his birth and forget about his ministry? Do we focus upon his death and resurrection and miss the transformative actions of his life? He shook the established order, and he did so without anger, without fear, without hatred. Even though those leaders around him, they had anger and fear and hatred. I think you can safely say that Christ lived his life with abandonment and abundance. He truly lived every day like it would be his last. So here it is, New Year's. Are you making some resolutions? Going to finally get rid of that extra 10 or maybe 20 pounds? I think we have a slide. They got me. I had a text, and I forgot the text. So let me go back to the text, if that's okay. I apologize. 1 Peter 2, verses 1 through 5. So I know they were really confused. I apologize. So get rid of all evil behavior. Be done with all deceit, hypocrisy, jealousy, and all unkind speech. Like newborn babies, you must crave pure spiritual milk so that you will grow into a full experience of salvation. Cry out for this nourishment now that you've had a taste of the Lord's kindness. You are coming to Christ, who is a living cornerstone of God's temple. He was rejected by people, but was chosen by God for great honor. And you are living stones that God is building into his spiritual temple. What's more, you are his holy priests. Through the mediation of Jesus Christ, you offer spiritual sacrifices that please God. Okay, on to the slide. So here it is, New Year's. Making some resolutions? Finally going to get rid of that extra 10 or 20 pounds? Me too. So that time between Christmas and New Year's allows me to take stock of what happened and what I'd like to happen. And it's funny, the things I plan to happen never quite turn out like I expect. Some things went right, I didn't anticipate. And some things went wrong, I wouldn't have guessed. So that's certainly been the case with First Service. A year ago, no one would have guessed we would be at the place we are right now. But if I can be honest, a year ago up there, everything was cool. We had a cool pastor. Lots of people enjoying the service. We got to be part of the thing in Orange County. It made us feel special. But to be blunt, for most of us, certainly not all, but for me, I was mailing it in. I was showing up, eating a great breakfast, enjoying some really loud music, great sermon, and going home. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But to be frank, I was playing church. Unlike Jesus, I wasn't living my life with abandonment. So the question for me is, how do I make a difference for God today? I'd ask the same question of you. If you look back over the last year, could you really say, I made a difference? For some of you, absolutely. For myself, maybe not so much. So that's a pretty harsh thing to say, and I'm saying it to me. But rather than spend a lot of time casting blame, there's a saying in our house, what did I do right and what could I do better? Now, my kids are tired of that saying because they hear it all the time. After a game, so what did you do right? What could you do better? After a test, what did you do right? What can you learn from that? In my relationship with my wife, what did I do right? Because all too often we take the rubber mallet, right, and we beat ourselves over the head about how bad we were. What did I do right? But what can I do better? How can I be better for you? So, let's talk about Garden Grove. What are some of the things that you all have done right? So, in my view, all of us who worship here are setting the standard for Adventism in Orange County and beyond. This is the kind of place that people want to come to for worship. We have many communities here in Garden Grove. different languages, ethnicities, and backgrounds, and we find a way to accommodate all of them and show them the love of Jesus. We're not perfect by any means, but it's a standard that reflects the best character of the Adventist message. This is a community that's shown its resilience in the face of extreme difficulty, and I'm proud of you. 2017 has been in many ways a difficult year. We've had to come to grips with change, and that's always tough. And this church, this community, we continue to practice love and acceptance as we understand it. So you have a lot to be proud about. But what can we do better? A couple of weeks ago in first service, we set aside a whole Sabbath school just to listen to the group and to learn. And we got some great suggestions. Here's some of the things that people said. We're a community, but we're not really a family. In a family, you know everybody's name. Here, each of us knows some people well, but we don't know everyone. Many we kind of know on site, but we don't know their names. We don't know where they work. We don't know what their hopes and dreams and aspirations are. So a big area we can grow is getting to know each other better, to move from community to family. Related to that, we're a community, but how well do we connect with our guests and visitors? We see them, we say hi, and often it doesn't go beyond that. Some have said that they like worshiping with us, but didn't feel included. How we interact with those who are experiencing us for the first time is an area that we need to improve on. And also, our outreach has been limited. We expected the pastor or the leadership or someone to do the work of outreach. We weren't really engaged in that. The reality is, we're someone. We have our work associates, our friends, our neighbors, our online social groups. Sharing the good news is sharing with those we connect with during the rest of the week. Okay, so we have things to be proud about and things to do. What does that mean for you and I? So let's go back to the text because it gives us both things to study and things to do. Be done with all deceit, hypocrisy, jealousy, and all unkind speech. Oh man, that is easy to say, hard to do. It's easy to talk about what this person is doing or that. Did you hear about this person at church? That person at Orangewood Academy? Or someone over at Costa Mesa or Fullerton? Not quite sure that is an example that Jesus set during his ministry here on earth. If I could control my tongue, I would be such a better person. Some people have something called the swear jar, you know, where if you say a bad word, you have to put a quarter or a dollar in it. Now, I'm sure that none of you swear. Maybe we'll call it an unkind jar, where every time you or I said something unkind or gossipy about someone, we had to put a quarter in a jar. Would it fill up fast? For me, it's about how can I become the biggest encourager? How can I make people feel better about themselves and their spiritual commitment? So when I was at 15, I got a job at a packing plant at my boarding academy. I had a boss who let me know she believed in me implicitly. That's a job where I learned to work. That job led to another and led to another, and that's how I paid for high school and college. And it actually really led to what I do today. So decades later, my boss, Sylvia Wheatley Kwok, and I are still friends. And she's still one of my biggest encouragers, which means I have to live up to the expectations she has of me. So you have encouragers in your life. I've had encouragers in mine. My grandmother, who would say in her Panamanian accent, "Oye, Mejo, you can be a lawyer, you can be a doctor, you can be president of the United States, anything you want." I must have heard that hundreds of times growing up. Or my wife, Charlotte, when we were dating, and she asked me what I wanted to do with my life, what did I wanted to do for work? And my answer is, well, I don't want a regular job. I want to travel, I want to have fun, I want to work hard, I want to do lots of creative things, but I don't want to do 9 to 5. And she's like, that's not a job. What is that? And I go, well, I don't know what it is, but that's what I want. So along the way, she has encouraged me, and she stuck by me all these years. I don't know where I'd be without her. And can I add, we have a long history with this church. 30 years ago, Charlotte and I were married right here. So if I end today with "I do," you'll know why. It worked out okay the first time. So the question is, how can I do the same for other people? How can I encourage them? How can you encourage other people to be their very best selves? So a lesson, both negative and positive, would be my relationship with my oldest daughter in sports. Some of you know Kaylee. She's 5'2" in college and weighs about 100 pounds. When she was 2, she was tiny, but she walked like a gymnast. She was flexible. She was strong. She's the only toddler I knew that had six-pack abs. She had all the physical gifts to be a world-class gymnast. So at 3, we put her in gymnastics, and she excelled. She had no fear of heights. She loved being on the 4-inch balance beam. At age 4, she could climb a rope 30 feet in the air and drop into a foam pit. As a parent watching that, it was awesome and terrifying all at the same time. I had it all mapped out. At age 16, she'd be world champion. And at age 17, she would peak for the Olympic Games in Rio. The perfect age for a gymnast. I was so excited. But at age 7, she told me she didn't want to be in gymnastics. Honestly, I was devastated. How could she throw all of those gifts away? She had a shot at being an Olympian, like Mary Lou Retton, Shannon Miller, or Simone Biles. I had to accept that her dreams were not mine, and mine were not hers. And honestly, I didn't do it very well. Of course, today in the news, we hear about what happened to some of those top-level gymnasts. And I think there, but for the grace of God, could be my little girl. Instead, she decided she wanted to play volleyball. Now, Kaylee is athletic, but when it comes to ball skills, she's all thumbs. She wanted to try out. I was pretty sure she wouldn't make the team. However, the coach led her on, not because of her ability, because she did whatever they told her to do without complaining. And she worked and she worked. In gymnastics, everything was easy for her. In volleyball, everything was hard. Earlene Tupike remembers because she coached her through middle school. 3 years after she started, she still struggled to hit a serve over the net underhanded. But she kept at it all through junior high, high school, then she made varsity. Along the way, I did my best to encourage her. Now, what I really wanted to do was coach her, to make her do it the right way. That wasn't my job. Instead, it was just to encourage. To be the parent who's at every game cheering enthusiastically even when they were losing badly. Even when it embarrassed her that I was there, which was every game. To be her supporter and not her judge. And then one day out of the blue, I get a message from my friend Mark Waldo from high school. He said, "Did you see the OC register?" I didn't get the paper. So he sent me this picture. I'm not responsible for her successes in athletics or academics or the other things she's done. I just got to be her encourager. And maybe knowing that there was someone in her corner, no matter what, helped her with some of the choices she made along the way. Encouragement. So I saw this quote about encouragement from Dale Doughton, and it was too good to pass up. "There aren't too many principles of proper business conduct with which just about everyone will completely agree. Two come to mind. Unless you're a professional athlete, don't offer coworkers encouragement by patting them on the butt. And don't burn bridges. These seem especially appropriate in today's times." Verse 2 of our text says, "Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that you will grow into a full experience of salvation." I have to admit that while I try to read my Bible, it doesn't happen every day. And sometimes I fall asleep and I don't pay attention. I wasn't hungry for what I truly needed. But if any of you have ever had a hungry baby, a really hungry baby, they make sure you know it. And the only thing that satisfies them is their mother's milk. It's like magic. Here they are, red-faced, screaming, squirming, But as soon as they latch on, they grow still, content, peaceful. As a parent, watching that serene experience between mother and child, that connection, in that moment, all seems right with the world, no matter what else is going on. It's the same with studying God's word. When you really need it, when it becomes the most basic part of your existence, it's entirely satisfying. Sometimes that need comes with fear. You have a life scare which jolts you into paying attention. Like when they asked me to speak today. I was like, okay. But then I'm like, okay, now what? So I started working on this talk. And then I found a verse that seemed to fit what I was trying to say. And then I'm studying it. And I'm going from verse to verse, making sure I understand the meaning. Because there's nothing like public speaking to put a magnifying glass on your focus. So if Pastor Dan is not well next week, really, one of you, feel free to... Why do we study? As the text says, so that you will grow into a full experience of salvation. Not only the salvation that is in heaven, but our full experience right here on earth in our day-to-day life as we interact with others. In addition to things to study, the text gives us things to do. And the text says, and you are living stones that God is building into his spiritual temple. What's more, you are his holy priests. Through the mediation of Jesus Christ, you offer spiritual sacrifices that please God. Verses 6 through 9 of this text calls Jesus the cornerstone and asks us to be the same. You and I are called to be the cornerstone, that first and firmest stone that everything else is built upon. And what we are building is his spiritual temple. So how do we do that? How do we build his spiritual temple? What spiritual sacrifices can we offer that please God? Well, in verse 9 of chapter 2, Peter says, you are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God. For he called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. So we're royal priests. We are God's very own possession. And what is our task? It's to show others the goodness of God. Which goes back to the very first part of this text. About doing away with unkind speech, deceit, hypocrisy, and jealousy. So, is our speech kind to our coworkers, to that person that cut us off on the freeway? How about people we disagree with politically? That person determined to shove their Make America Great Again hat in our face? Or conversely, that person determined to tear down our president and find fault with everything he does, says, or tweets, no matter what it is? How do we interact with them? How about with our siblings, or parents, or our children? How do we treat the person on the person at the off-ramp asking for a handout when they certainly look like they could hold a job? I'm not saying we're bad people if we don't pony up with some cash. Just asking, are we engaged, or did we just dismiss them? So how do we do the work of Christmas? Well, when I was thinking about that, what came to mind for me were the lyrics of Tim McGraw's song, Live Like You Are Dying. And the song is about a man with a bad diagnosis and what it might do, and what you might do if you knew that the end was near. And some of the lyrics go like this. And I loved deeper, and I spoke sweeter, and I gave forgiveness I've been denying. And he said, someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying. He said I was finally the husband that most of the time I wasn't, and I became a friend would like to have. And that song just struck me in terms of what we were talking about today. So after I wrote this talk and put that song into it, it became especially meaningful. I went to high school with Mark Holm, who is on the faculty over at Loma Linda Academy. And sometime last weekend, Mark had a stroke. It went undetermined for several days, and then he spent 14 hours in the ER, and finally they diagnosed it, and then they had brain surgery to resect the affected portion of his brain. They're hopeful for a full recovery, but it's going to be a long road. So our prayers go out for Mark and his family. But it makes you stop and think, this is someone I grew up with. How would you live today if you knew that the end is right around the corner? This church, you and I, we're called. We're called to be a little different. Instead of returning evil with evil or insult with insult, we repay evil with a blessing. An encouraging word backed up with our hungry, searching study of the Word of God. As the song says, may you love deeper, speak sweeter, and give any forgiveness that you've been denying. This is a New Year's resolution worth keeping. May you have an amazing Sabbath and an outstanding 2018.